We wouldn't be able to keep this archive going without your support. Donate online today at wyxr.org.
91.7 FM Memphis.
Welcome once again to the Thacker Mountain Radio Hour. We're coming to you tonight from the Powerhouse Arts Center in Oxford, Mississippi. Thank you. Welcome to the Thacker Mountain Radio Hour. As I mentioned, we're at the Powerhouse Arts Center here, I think on South 14th Street, right down the street from the Oxford Square. Great show for y'all tonight. A fine folk singer, country singer. Her act is called My Girl the River. Fine songwriter. She's got a new album out we're going to be talking about and hearing about. Catherine Wood is here with her latest murder mystery, Lady Killer. And we're going to Sweden, and yeah, we're going to the Grecian islands, and everybody in the book is in great shape, and they're fit, and they're beautiful, and yeah, it's just like my life, ladies and gentlemen. It's a fun read. Who done it? You never know to the last page, and then you're not even really sure. And to top it off, our good friends, West Africa meets North Mississippi with Afrosippi is here. What a sound. But we love our house band. Y'all please bring them to the stage. It is the Yana Bushwhackers. Boys.
From the light and you so much.
Yeah, the Bushwhackers, y'all. One more time for them, please. Ricky Burkhead, we got Greg Johnson helping us out. Keon Love, and up front, the man, Paul Tate, the Yellow Bushwhackers. One more time for them. Better and better. We love them. They'll be back later on in the show. All right, My Girl, the River. And when you hear that's the name of the band, you're expecting like 10-piece band, My Girl, the River, and it's just you, Chris. You're the river. You're my girl.
It's me.
And
it's
you're
me.
The river. That's perfect.
That's right, Joe.
I was listening to your album this afternoon. It is wonderful. It's called Songs About Space.
Thank you so much. It is called Songs About Space. It's a collection of songs over the last 12 years or so, and I divided it into three categories. So there's space, where I sort of allude to terms of space and metaphor, and then there's mental space, and there's physical space. So it's a bit.
Yeah, I took me a third Advil, and I started feeling that space, baby. And I was space. Yeah. We're so glad you're here.
Thank you. From
United States, but now living over in the UK. Is that right?
That's right. I'm a graduate of Delta State, fighting okra.
Wow.
And but I have been in the UK for 24 years.
Well, that is
so
wonderful.
Do I sound British? Answers on a postcard.
Well, we had a guy from Scotland last week. You don't sound like him, I can promise you that. He would cook a fighting okra. All right. Or bake it. We're so glad you're here, though, and these are great
Thank
songs.
You.
Look forward to hearing it. Again, y'all, My Girl, the River.
Thank you all so much. So I'm going to introduce you to this album. And first, we're going to start with space. So if you can imagine a seedy little bar in L.A., and you've got the B-list actors and actresses coming in, and you've got the locals who hang out there, and you know they're getting served by their favorite bartender. It's a love triangle. He loves her. She loves the bartender. And the bartender loves himself. It's called the Galaxy Room.
Have you seen the face in the sun? Cannot see the man in the moon. She thinks that she's in love, right here in the galaxy room. Instead of flirting with the stars, he would only look her way. He would see the love of his life was in a light year away. A light year away. She comes to the bar every Sunday night. He serves her with a wink. When he's around, she's like the time. Same day, same drink. Sits by the door till closing time. Hangs herself in gloom. Can he see that she's in love? Right here in the galaxy room. Staring straight into sun is the loneliest man in the moon, blinded by her wondrous light, right here in the galaxy room. Instead of staring at the bar, if she would only look his way, here she would see the love of her life was in a light year. A light year away. He comes to the bar every Sunday night, sits in the back to hide. Invisible, painfully shy, when will their worlds collide? By the door with her watery drink, the bar is closing soon. He tries to wave his soul she could save right here in the galaxy room. The galaxy room. Galaxy room. Whoa, whoa. The galaxy room. Oh, the galaxy room. Oh. Have you seen
Thank you so much. It sure is an honor to be here. And I was here virtually during the time that we don't talk about too much. But I wrote this song during that time, and thinking about our teenagers and how much they struggled, it just got really hard. And how, if, as a parent, or anyone that you love out there, if you could just take their burden, you could take it off of them, you would gladly do it. And so this is for anybody out there who feels this song makes an impact on them. It's called Helpless. I can tell you are not sleeping again. Oh, I feel helpless. Oh, I feel helpless. I wanna wrap you like a baby in a basket and set you down on the river and let you flow away. I can tell you you have been crying again. Oh, I feel helpless. Oh, I feel helpless. I wanna kiss your tears off and spit them into the river and let them flow. I can tell you have been hurting yourself again. Oh, I feel helpless. Oh, I feel helpless. I wanna burn your pain down. I can tell you that I am here for you. I know you feel helpless. I know you feel helpless. I wanna put my arms around you and sit by you. Thank you. Thank you so much. So I was going to play another song off that album, but then I had some news. I had some news about Mary Lou. And I was told a little bit about Mary Lou. And I'm real sad that I couldn't meet her. But she's sitting there. And I believe she liked to have a bit of fun, and she loved music. So I'm going to dedicate this song called Hot Chicken to Mary Lou. And it's got a little bit of a sing-along. Now, don't let me down, y'all. All you have to do is, when I give you the cue, you just go, a hot chicken! That's all you got to do. It's a lovely big shout. You ready? Shall we have a practice? Chicken! I love y'all. I love the Brits, but they can't get that timing right. They come in too early. And y'all have got it. You nailed it. First time. Here we go. It's a cautionary tale about Nashville hot chicken. You touch my lips with your fingertips. I taste something hot. Is that all? Add a little spice to make it taste so nice. Do you wanna try some of my hot chicken? Folks from everywhere know I like to share. Nothing tastes so good in my neighborhood. Add a little spice, make it taste so nice. Do you wanna try some of my hot chicken? Burn you from the inside out, make you wanna scream and shout, make you shake your grab a glass, something cool. Don't be a fool. It might make you cry when you try some of my hot chicken. Here we go, everybody. You know this. Wake up, little Susie. Wake up. Wake up, little Susie. Wake up. Don't be shy now. Wake up, little Susie, wake up. One more for luck. Wake up, little Susie, wake up. You sound amazing. The movie wasn't so hot, it didn't have much of a plot. We fell asleep, our goose is cooked, our reputation is shot. Wake up, little Susie, wake up, little Susie, wake up, little Susie. We got to go. We got to go. Mama always said you got to keep your head. Just enough heat to make a move that beats. Add a little spice to make it taste so nice. Do you wanna try? Say, do you wanna try? Say, do you wanna try some of my hot chicken? Thank you so much, Thacker Mountain Radio. It's been a privilege, an absolute privilege and an honor to play for you this evening and share my songs. Thank you to my friend Tim, MacD, thank you very much, and to Jim.
Thank you. One more time, My Girl the River. Otherwise known as Chris Wilkinson Hughes, Louisiana native, apparently a graduate of Delta State University. Bless you, Fighting Okra. All right. And she has copies of Songs About Space out front. We look forward to visiting with you. One more time, My Girl, the River. Man, at Kenny Kimbrough's backstage, and he busted a gut every time y'all said hot chicken. Like being back there with a 5-year-old. It was really wonderful. All righty. We want to remind you that you're listening to the Thacker Mountain Radio Hour. You're hearing us on WUMS, University of Mississippi. We're coming to you tonight from the Powerhouse Arts Center in Oxford, Mississippi. Also like to thank tonight's sponsors, Walk-On's Bistro, for our food backstage, Red Panther Brewery, the official cold beer of the Thacker Mountain Radio Hour. See, that's what Snooki and Mary Lou did back in the day. We didn't have our own beer. Now we got our own beer. I mean, she laid the foundation for that. Cathead Distillery also. Also like to thank our sponsors, Dr. Stephen and Kay Gase, Case Carol Etheridge Family Foundation, Larry and Michael Johnson Family Foundation, the Yatna Batafa Arts Council, the Freeland Drum Lab, the good folks at Square Books, could not do it without them, the good folks at the Mississippi Arts Commission, our friends over at Visit Mississippi, the Snooki and Mary Lou Williams Foundation of Water Valley, Mississippi. Also, our affiliates, WYXR Community Radio in Memphis, WUTC Community Radio in Chattanooga, WOUT Knoxville, Tennessee, the good folks in the stations at Mississippi Public Broadcasting, the good folks at Alabama Public Radio, and KNCE True Taos Radio in Taos, New Mexico. Keon Love, y'all. Thank you so much, Keon. All right. Thanks for all the support. Great sponsors, great affiliates. Again, we mentioned Snooki and Mary Lou Williams Foundation. Both we have now lost Snooki and Mary Lou. Mary Lou passed this week at the age of 91, almost 92, and was right there on the front row so many weeks. It's going to be so hard to not have her there physically, but we know she's in our hearts, in our minds and souls, and has done so much for this show, the whole family. So we really so appreciative. Love y'all. Thanks for being here today. It means a lot. All righty. Catherine Wood, staying in a Mississippi vein, you're a native Mississippian.
Yes, I am. I grew up in Jackson.
Wow. And you write books. That's so rare for somebody from Mississippi.
One thing Mississippi has is writers.
Well, we do. And some readers as well. This new one, it is from Penguin Random House. It's called Lady Killer. As I mentioned, we're on Greek islands. We're in Sweden. We're taking ferries. We're in beautiful hotels, beautiful settings. But there are about three or four great mysteries all going on at one time. And at the crux of it is this wonderful female, lifelong female friendship between Gia and Abby, we're going to talk about. It is called Lady Killer, y'all. Please welcome Catherine Wood.
Thank you.
All these great locations. Do you go to your publisher and say, I hate to break this to you, but I got to go to Sweden for the next book, and they get the checkbook out? Is that how it works?
I just go. And then maybe I write it off.
Yeah. I did see where you wait until the book is completely done before you even pitch it to an editor, because it can change.
That's true.
Yeah.
I'm not great at following my outlines. I do make them. I know where I'm going, and then I take a left turn. That's how you keep it interesting, right? I mean, if I knew where I was going all the time, I might lead you there. But by letting the story unfold and the characters speak, I end up someplace that maybe I didn't intend to go, but it's better than where I was going to go before.
And it just so happens all these places just happen to be absolutely beautiful.
Well, when I'm thinking about writing, I've got to spend, you know, a year in this place with these characters every day. So I think about, where do I want to go this year every day in my mind? And I wanted to go to Greece and Sweden.
Boy, for all you writing students out there, that's all there is to it, man. Just pick a spot, and if you're really great at writing about it, like Catherine is, well, tell us about Gia and Abby. Again, no spoilers, but
Gia and Abby could not be more different. Gia is a rebel heiress, and Abby is her bookish best friend who is the daughter of Gia's former chef. So you've got a little bit of a power dynamic at play there. That also, Abby's education was paid for by Gia's family. So it's a bit complicated. The girls have been best friends since they were teenagers, and they did have a tragedy happen to them the summer that they were 18, that Gia wrote a memoir about, and it is now 12 years later. Gia is turning 30 and has invited Abby to celebrate her birthday under the Northern Lights in Sweden. But when Abby and Gia's brother Benny show up, Gia's not there. So Abby and Benny are worried enough about Gia to go to her Greek islands estate where she's spending the summer to look for her. But when they arrive in Greece, they find her beachfront estate eerily empty with no sign of Gia other than the manuscript that she penned leading up to her disappearance.
Man, we've got to read this. You've got your pitch down. It's sort of a book within a book in a way, right?
Because right. So we have Abby's point of view, and then we have Gia's point of view through the manuscript that she has written.
So we cut from the chapters. We'll have Abby's goings on, and inevitably you sort of leave us with a little cliffhanger of what she's doing. Then we go back to the manuscript to find out
To find out where Gia is, and because Abby's now, she's looking for Gia, so she's turning to this manuscript to help her try and figure out what happened to Gia.
Man, and you mentioned the Northern Lights, and we were talking backstage. That was one thing you have not been able to do, is to go see.
That is a bucket list thing for me. I'm dying to see the Northern Lights. I have not actually seen them yet, except for in my mind's eye when I was writing this book.
Well, and I also saw an interview with you where you mentioned during COVID, you couldn't travel to any of these spots. So tell us what you did.
The Troubles, I was writing a book set in the jungles of Mexico, The Vicious Circle, which I wrote under my other name, Catherine St. John. And I had been to the jungles, but not the specific jungle I was writing in. And my trip was canceled because of the Troubles. And so I needed a way to be able to feel like I was there and immerse myself. And so I got an Oculus. And there's a great app that you can use called Wander, and it's basically Google Maps, but it's all in 3D, and it feels like you're there. And so I used that to write that book, and it's something that I use as a tool now. I've been most of the places that I write about, but the details are so important with I'm writing escapist thrillers. So I really want to transport my readers to wherever it is I'm writing about, and I feel like the best way to do that is through detail. That people really pick up on those details, and it's the details that can make you feel like you're really there. So to remind myself of what it feels like to be walking along a boardwalk in Greece, I will pull up my Oculus and go to Greece.
That is so cool. You don't even have to leave the house.
And I mean, I'd like to leave the house to go to Greece at the drop of a hat, but unfortunately I have children.
But I mean, the Mexican jungle, like, hey, no mosquitoes, man. That's perfect. I mean, that worked. You've also got some financial wheeling dealings going on in here involving multi-million dollar properties. Was that something also you had to research, or are you secretly a real estate mogul?
Back when I was an actress in another lifetime, I also worked as a real estate agent, which is, I'm sure, a story you've never heard, an actress real estate agent. So I do have a little bit of experience in the transfer of properties, although none of them that I represented were ever worth $14-15 million.
Oh, man. Before repairs. Right. You're going to read from this for us. We appreciate that. I do have to get you to try to tell us, I'm sure you're sworn to secrecy, but you can tell us about television possibilities in this book being sold.
Television, what's that?
Yeah.
I can't talk specifically about anything, but I can say keep your ears pricked.
So we may be seeing this on some sort of screen.
Maybe.
Soon. All right. And you won't have to sit home anymore. You can cash the checks and go anywhere you want to go.
I'll be in Greece.
You've already decided. Oh, and by the way, the next one is, where is it set?
The next one is set in St. Bart's.
Man, what a what a gig.
It's a terrible life, let me tell you.
All right, Catherine Woods. Some of you may remember her previous books under Catherine St. John. She is now writing under Catherine Wood. And we love her parents, who are based here in Oxford, Mississippi. We see you and Frank. We appreciate them so much. Just telling all the secrets. This book, again, is called Lady Killer. We're going to hear a little bit from it now. Again, y'all welcome. Catherine Wood.
Thank you. Thank you. So, as I mentioned, this book is told from Gia's and Abby's points of view, and it plays a lot with truth and perception and what is real and what is not. And so the beginning of the book starts with a neutral voice, an omniscient voice, to give us a little bit of a clean slate. And that's what I'm going to start with. Prologue. New York City, March. The night before Hugo Torres's funeral, a cheetah escaped its enclosure at the Bronx Zoo and devoured a warthog. Had the victim been a more charming animal, say, a koala or a monkey, perhaps there would have been some level of outrage directed at the cheetah. But as it was, the whispers among the mourners assembled in the cathedral on Park Avenue the next morning were of sympathy not for the warthog, but for the cheetah. After all, cheetahs were predators not meant for a life in captivity. The cat had only done what it was born to do. The turnout from the memorial service was impressive. The church, packed to the gills with Manhattan's finest, decked in their best bereavement attire, rendered ant-like by the towering stone pillars and soaring vaulted ceiling. Diamonds glittered on beds of black lace as mourners craned their necks to get a glimpse of the mahogany casket, their morbid curiosity stifled by the closed lid, draped in more roses than a Kentucky Derby winner. The invitation had said 9:30, but it wasn't until the church bells struck 10 that the family stepped through the massive doors, ushered inside by a gust of bitingly cold wind that chilled the back third of the church. Everyone turned to watch the spectacle, carefully concealing their fascination as the solemn group proceeded up the marble nave. First in line was the third and current wife, Melody, a waxy-looking French-Canadian of 50, who had a frigid personality and a frosty relationship with her husband's exes and their children. Her bone-thin frame was draped in black wool and ivory-colored pearls. The hand of the 6-year-old son she shared with Papa Hugo gripped tightly in hers. Everyone murmured how awful it was for the poor boy to lose his father at such a young age, but such were the risks of a May-December romance. It's fair to say the congregation was universally disappointed that the crazy second wife wasn't in attendance. Of course, they knew it wasn't okay to call people who had been institutionalized for mental illness crazy. Could you even say that word anymore? But privately, that was how they thought of her. In her day, Caroline had been a talented painter, not to mention very beautiful, with a habit of flirting with husbands who didn't belong to her. Now she lived in a sanatorium in Switzerland, like it was the 19th century or something, neatly packed away for unbecoming behavior. Her daughter, Gia, was just as stunning as her mother had been, and just as much trouble, elite circles would say. She was a staple of the society pages, flitting from boyfriend to boyfriend between various creative endeavors that included a salacious but surprisingly well-written memoir and a perfume she loved too much to sell to the public. Today, she was wearing a skin-tight black satin dress with long sleeves and a completely open back, her eyes hidden by giant black sunglasses, her long brunette locks gathered into a bun at the nape of her neck, clutching the arm of her brother, Benicio. Benny had wavy dark hair like his sister's, almost long enough on top to tuck behind his ears, and they both shared their father's deep-set eyes and olive skin and their mother's artistic sensibilities. The mothers in the crowd registered Benny's bare ring finger and pinched their eligible daughters, who blushed but for once didn't protest. Sadly, ever since Benny's first screenplay was turned into a runaway hit film, he was perpetually accompanied by some actress or other, and to the chagrin of all the mothers, his current girlfriend, the star of a television show about witches, would be stapled to his side by the time that he reached the reception. Notably missing were the British first wife and her 3 grown children. It was no secret that she regarded Americans as gauche and had elected to hold a competing memorial service in London, which was, ironically, rather gauche. When the family reached the first row, Melody allowed Gia and Benny to sit first, then took her place at the end of the pew, leaving a discernible gap between herself and her stepchildren. Gia's best friend, Abby, the daughter of the family's former chef, leaned forward from the second row and put her hand on Gia's shoulder. Thanks to Papa Hugo's generosity, Abby had gone to boarding school with Gia and the daughters and sons of many in the congregation. She was petite and reserved, pleasant looking but not gorgeous, an unobtrusive interloper in their rarefied circles. And though she was better turned out than she had been in high school, her mousy hair now a smart shoulder-length blonde, her glasses replaced by contacts that revealed large green eyes, her middle-class clothes and bearing would have rendered her nearly invisible to this set, were her face at 18 not burned into their minds. Scandal was the wrong word for what had happened. Shocking violence was more like it. The assault Abby had suffered at the hands of Gia's stalker was shocking, that much was certain, and violent. But real tragedy had been narrowly averted when Gia stepped in, saving Abby's life by extinguishing that of her attacker. The news cycle seized on the story. Heiress kills homicidal maniac and saves best friend's life. They'd all seen the television interviews Gia gave and read the memoir she wrote about it afterward, too, of course. Though some accused her of profiting off tragedy, the book had been a moderate success and would have provided her the opportunity for a career as an author if she had so desired. Alas, 10 years later, her publisher was still waiting on her follow-up. Everyone stared at the gold-framed oil portrait of Papa Hugo displayed on an easel next to his coffin as the priest rightly declared him an icon, beloved by those close and far. It was warm in the church, and minds began to wander as the priest went on to summarize how Papa Hugo had made his money in oil but poured it back into clean energy. And that is why Hugo chose to donate his entire $500 million fortune to the Torres Foundation. This got their attention. The Torres Foundation had been founded by Papa Hugo and his second wife, the crazy artist, and therefore the main causes it funded were the environment, which was his passion, and the arts, which was hers. Donating his fortune to the foundation was admirable, of course, but what of his children? Suddenly, the congregation's focus was once again on the front row of the church. As they desperately tried to make out from the tilt of a head or the side of a face whether his family had known they would be cut out of the will. Husbands and wives gave each other meaningful glances as they bowed their heads for a final prayer before everyone, even those who had thought 5 minutes ago that they might skip the wake in favor of a round of golf, headed over to the ballroom at the Waldorf for the reception. Thank you.
Catherine Wood, y'all, one more time for her, please. Great job, thank you. Lady Killer is the name of the novel. Catherine will visit with us out of the table, sign your copy. It is wonderful. It's a page-turner. It's, it's a PG-13-ish R-rated, man. I mean, it ain't the Hardy Boys, you know. I found that out about page three, yeah, but it's a lot of fun. And I look forward to seeing it on whatever medium it'd be perfect for, a movie or TV. All right, Afri Sippy, one of our family bands. We feel like they are part of the family, been on a few times over the years, various personnel, but always at the base of it there is Galil Kumba, who moved here. Yeah, in the early 2000s. We love them. Y'all please welcome Afri Sippy. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Taco Mountain Radio. It's always a pleasure for me to come back here and to play with my friends, AfroCP Band, and here in Powerhouse. It was always very nice. I like that feeling. Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Just Afro CP, Justin Shaw on the bass, Kenny Kimbrough on the drum, Chad Henson on the hand drum, and my boy Baxter on the lead guitar. Thank you very much.
Always a pleasure. Afro CP, y'all. Wonderful sound. One more time for him. Galel Kumba, beautiful, beautiful sound, beautiful man. And this man can whip up a bad plate of some African food as well. We're going to get him to cook up for us next time. Yeah,
every Wednesday I'm on the campus.
Oh, you're cooking on campus?
Yeah, every
Wednesday. We can kidnap you from them, man. That's no fun. We'll get you down here. A lot more fun down here. We got our own beer, man. Come on. All right. Thank you all so much for being here. We've had a lot of fun. One more time for all of our guests. If you don't mind, My Girl, The River, Songs from Space. She'll join us after the show. Catherine Wood, y'all, Lady Killer. Read it before it's on Hulu. And one more time for Afro CP, our pals. As we have mentioned, we are mourning the loss of our dear, dear friend, Mary Lou Williams, and we appreciate the Williams family so much for all the support over all the years. But when I think of Mary Lou, and I bet those of you that know her, the first word that comes to your mind is joy. She was full of joy. She spread joy. She'd wear those little blinking red light things that I got to get a pair of those. It was a lot like my good friend Ronzo. When you saw her, you just felt good. It was a good day. She was having fun. You were going to have fun. And it happened to our show, too. They brought a lot of joy to the show. We will miss them terribly, but we will also celebrate them forever, including right this second with one of her favorite tunes to send us home. I'll Fly Away, y'all, and we'll see you on the radio. Please join in with me.
Mountain Radio Hour's executive director is Lucy Gaines. Our production director is Tim Lee. Our broadcast and post-production engineer is Jeffrey Reed. Our front of house engineer is Blake Gardner.
Just a few more weary days and then I'll fly away to a land where joy never ends. Oh, I'll fly away.
Mempho Music Festival returns to the Radiance Amphitheater at Memphis Botanic Garden October 4th through 6th. This year's fest features the excitement of Jack White, Trey Anastasio and Classic Tab, Cody Jinx, Goose, and many more. Ticket packages, lineup information, FAQs, and more at memphofest.com. Did you know when you purchase a specialty arts license plate, you're supporting the Tennessee Arts Commission and organizations like WYXR? It's easy. Just take your old plate to your county clerk and swap it out, or choose the arts plate when it's time for renewal. Show your love for WYXR and other Tennessee arts organizations by visiting tnspecialtyplates.org.
Monster Market returns. Memphis's original freaky pop-up shop will be open October 11th through the 16th at the Medicine Factory with a brand new collection of strange art, apparel, and home decor. One-of-a-kind oddities sourced exclusively from makers and artists and unique in-store events every day at Monster Market 2024 this October. More information at